This is the Relics Audio Hour.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another edition of the Relics Audio Hour. I am your host, Jesse Lauder. This episode is our second installment in our series with guitarist Eric Krasno that we are affectionately calling Conversations with Kras, where Eric interviews noted musicians about their line of work. This installment features Eric talking to a great up-and-coming musician from the Bay Area named Graham Lesh, along with his dad, Phil. Phil plays bass. Okay, all kidding aside, this is indeed a very special conversation with the Leshes, who frequently play the music of the Grateful Dead, among many others, with the Terrapin Family Band. So get ready, we will have that conversation for you shortly. But first, as we do in every episode, to tell you more about Phil, Graham, and Krasno's history with Relics, here is Relics' editor-in-chief, Dean Budnick.
Thanks, Jesse. We're thrilled that our good friend Eric Krasno, the celebrated guitarist and producer, is back with us, leading another conversation. Last time, he spoke with John Mayer, and for this go-round, it's the father-son tandem of Phil and Graham Lesh. The Lesh family has been well represented in the pages of Relics over the course of our 44 years, and I encourage you to stop by relics.com, where we have articles and videos from the two of them in multiple settings, highlighting their creative output with the Grateful Dead, Phil Lesh and Friends, the Terrapin Family Band, and Midnight North. You can learn about the latest issue of the magazine, which features Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats on the cover, as well as articles on Bob Weir and Don Was, Hot Rise, Blues Traveler, Edie Brickell, Rayland Baxter, Cat Power, Jorma Kaukonen, Ace of Cups, and plenty more. While you're there, please subscribe. And remember, you can also sign up to receive our monthly newsletter, as well as the Relics Daily 7, which compiles the best of jambands.com and relics.com and delivers it to your inbox.
Thank you, Dean. I'd like to also remind you that the Relics Audio Hour is a part of the Osiris Podcast Network, and Osiris has partnered recently with one of my all-time favorite providers of nourishment, Ben & Jerry's. Ben & Jerry's has collaborated with Vermont's other finest export, Fish with a PH, and the Waterwheel Foundation, Fish's Foundation, to create a limited flavor. It's ice cream, a caramel malt ice cream with almond toffee pieces, fudge fish, and a caramel swirl. I've had it, and it's delicious. The packaging and a very limited t-shirt were designed by Jim Pollock, and a portion of the proceeds for the ice cream and all of the proceeds for the teas are donated to the Waterwheel Foundation. The ice cream and teas can be ordered at store.benjerry.com. If you use the promo code OSIRIS, you can get free shipping on all orders over $50 for the rest of 2018. It might be getting cold outside, but ice cream tastes better in the winter anyway. So get to it, guys. Store.benjerry.com and get some It's Ice Cream. Also, for our regular listeners, you might be wondering what you're hearing. We have some new theme music courtesy of our friend Robert Walter. The name of the theme song is Posthuman, and it's off of Robert's new album, Spacesuit. Robert's keyboard brother, Marco Benevento, had previously provided our theme music, so I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Marco for his service. You're a beautiful man, Marco. Alright, before we get to Phil and Graham, I sat down with Kras to discuss his personal history with the storied basis of the Grateful Dead, and why he wanted to chat with this father-son duo. Alright, I am here with Eric Krasno. We're going to kick off our second installment of Conversations with Kras, and I'm going to have Eric talk to us about our next guest, Phil Lesh, and his long-standing history with Phil. So, Kras, when did you first link up with Phil?
Well, the first time we really linked up, you know, actually, I should go further back because Soul Live opened for Phil and Friends, but I didn't, and I met him briefly, but we didn't really talk much, and I don't know, there wasn't a ton of interaction there. Sure. That was a long time ago, probably early 2000s when it was the Q. But fast forward to 2013, I believe. Yeah, it was November 2013, I think. And Pete Shapiro, you know, I had been talking to Pete about, you know, doing a Phil and Friends thing for a little while. And Pete was like, oh, you got to play with Phil. And I was always like, man, I would love to. And he connected with Phil about us playing together. And somehow Phil had heard my album Reminisce, because when I eventually met him, he was like, oh man, I love the version of Get Back, let's play that, you know. And
nice.
He knew some other music, but Pete had the idea to put us in Central Park to do like this pop-up gig, and they were doing this thing called Jazz in Colors. Okay. That Pete was involved with.
Right.
In Central Park, and where there was no real amplification, it was just guys playing like upright bass and acoustic guitar, saxophones in the park. And he suggested that we just show up and play. And I
you
remember
and Phil.
Me, Phil, and Joe Russo.
Oh my God,
trio! And we had these little battery powered tiny little amps. There was no plug, no power source. And I remember I had a gig the night before in Chicago, and I had to take a super early flight because he wanted to do it, I think, like 11 a.m. or, you know, maybe noon. And Phil was playing the Brooklyn Bowl, I think, the next day.
Okay.
With the Terrapin Band. I was one of the earliest Terrapin Band, family band gigs.
Yeah.
And it was, I think... initially, Terrapin Family Band was without Phil, and then this was like Phil with the Terrapin okay. Band at okay. Brooklyn Bowl, I believe, the day after. But anyway.
So this is 11 a.m. in Central Park.
Yes, and they picked me up. I remember, so you know, Pete had someone pick me up. We showed up there, and I basically like shook his hand, plugged in, and started playing.
And that was your first time playing with Phil?
Yeah.
How cool.
And Joe and he and I just kind of improvised for a while. We kind of hinted on Get Back. That was when he was like, oh, we should do your version of Get Back. And we jammed on that. We just kind of just had a blast, and you know, there was, and what happened was, initially there was just a few people kind of wandering around, and they were like, "Is that Phil?" And then I think they did a relics like tweeted, "Hey, like, you know, Phil." I don't even know exactly what they said, but
right.
hinted that we were playing. Within like 15-20 minutes, there was a big crowd of people,
and
people were video, you know, on their phone or whatever,
yeah.
And it kind of started getting around. And then he invited me to play with the family band
at the bowl
the next day,
yeah.
And that's where I met Graham, and we just like kind of instantly hit it off. And I'd known Ross for a while, or actually, I'm sorry, that's when I met Ross James too.
Yeah.
So you know,
guitar
and I now
the
you know,
family band.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know, and now you know, it feels like I've known them a long time.
And you're part of
yeah.
the family at
yeah.
this point. I mean,
yeah.
like you play quite a bit with them. You go to Terrapin, you travel out west to spend weeks at a time in San Rafael, right?
Yeah, it's been amazing. They really kind of welcomed me into their family, and I've done tons of gigs. You know, we went to Hawaii together, and we did a little tour last fall in the U.S., like Chicago, Nashville. A few months after this, I played with him at the Capitol Theater for his 75th birthday.
Okay.
And yeah, it's been really cool just getting to know them. And I've been working with Graham and writing with them. They invited me out to do writing sessions for the family band. And we wrote a couple songs that are now in the repertoire.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty cool. And, you know, I first saw Phil, you know, with one of my earliest concerts. I was 12 years old, I think. And 13, around that time, yeah. My brother was a Deadhead,
yeah.
And he brought me out to see them at Brendan Byrne Arena in 89, MSG in like 88, and
wow.
I was a little kid,
wow,
yeah, 11,
wow.
12, 13. My first live music experiences. So I was talking to Jill, Phil's wife, about that, and you know, Graham was like a baby.
Yeah.
And she was carrying him around.
And now you're in a band with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, because I got to go backstage randomly in 89.
Okay.
As a little kid. My
wow.
brother got me backstage because he had a friend who knew somebody or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I remember going back there and seeing the guys and just being like, oh my God.
Of course. Probably one of your first backstage experiences.
Oh yeah, probably the first for
yeah.
sure. Yeah.
So aside from the fact that obviously Phil's been an influence on you, you having your early experiences with the Grateful Dead, what made you want to interview Phil and Graham for this edition of Conversations with Kras?
I've always been fascinated with the father-son musical, or just like the family musical dynamic. And theirs is like kind of a legendary one. Graham really studies the music and respects the music of the Grateful Dead, but also totally has his own voice as a songwriter. And, you know, hearing them sing together and how they blend together and working with them on stage has just been a really cool experience. Yeah. And I just thought talking with them on the podcast would be really interesting.
Awesome. Well, all right. So paint the picture for us. Where did we do this?
So we did this in between soundcheck and the gig backstage at Central Park, the summer stage.
About a month ago.
And this was part of like a three or four day run that we did that culminated with the last show at the Apollo, where we actually brought out the Harlem Gospel Choir and Talib Kweli.
So crazy.
And Nikki Bloom.
I still don't believe that happened. That did not happen.
It was an epic night that I will absolutely never forget. When the gospel choir came in on the chorus of like Knocking on Heaven's Door, and when we did Get by Talib Kweli, I just never could have imagined doing Get by Talib Kweli with Phil and the band and the gospel choir. It was just like a really special night. Shout out to Pete Shapiro for having those ideas. And he called me a few months before that. He's like, I got one for you. That's the classic Shapiro. I got one for you, Kras. And he'll throw out some ideas. And we kind of, you know, built the set list and put together the show. And I think it just was, it was a risky endeavor. And I think it went really well. And
awesome.
It was a benefit for headcount.
Right.
And
right.
To raise voter awareness as well.
And maybe we'll give our listeners a little taste of that later on in
That'd
the episode. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here it is. The second edition of Conversations with Kras with Phil and Graham Lesh from Central Park.
I find it really, really fascinating playing with the two of you guys together. Uh-huh. It's been such an incredible experience for me. And I think we'll get into that. I want to start a little bit with asking you, Phil, a little bit about your origins in music. And I know you've probably been asked that question a lot.
Yeah. It's all in my book, Eric. You
know. I know. And I've read. Actually, I listened to the audio book with you reading it, which was
even
better.
That's abridged.
Oh, is it? Yes.
Yeah, they a lot of them are, especially in like memoirs like that.
I see.
But so you can't get the full experience from the
audio. Well, I've gotten
book.
Some pretty cool experiences just being around and asking some questions, which is why I was happy that you were willing to do this. But I guess, you know, one of the really fascinating things for me is that you picked up the bass, you know, kind of right as you were joining the band, right?
Yeah, I mean that was my brief. That was my job.
Right.
Garcia just told me, hey, I want you to come play bass in this band. I know you can do it. You're a musician. You know, you can pick it up real quick. It's not that difficult.
You guys were friends before that, and he really respected you as a musician, and he just...
For some reason, we had never played together
before. Okay.
Before I actually joined the band. But I had always wanted to play with him. But I was into composition, classical composition, and jazz.
Right.
You know, and we were kind of in two different genres of music, and I...
Right.
It just felt like it would never happen, you know?
Right.
Then the walls caved in, you know?
Right. And you played trumpet at that time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you did some composition. You studied composition, right?
Yeah.
So picking up the bass, was that pretty natural for you?
Well, I had played violin before, so there I had a sort of a handle on it a little bit, you know, four strings, you know? So.
And, you know, a lot of people talk about your approach as a very unique. In fact, I don't know if there's anyone else that plays in your style.
Don't know that there is either.
Yeah. And was that a conscious thing, or is that just where you went?
I'd been listening to some rock music during the period before Jerry invited me to join a band. And, the instrument was fascinating, but the role it played was like totally boring.
Right.
You know, so all I knew was that I didn't want to play that kind of bass.
Right.
So I basically wanted to make it an independent melodic line.
Right.
And tying the chords together rather than just playing the roots and sitting in the pocket. And I'd have to say that the inspiration really for it was Bach.
Interesting.
Yeah, the Bach's bass lines, Brahms bass lines.
And was that from
all my studies of classical music, yeah.
Interesting. And you were in school. Where did you study?
It was kind of a little checkered career. Yeah. I started out at College of San Mateo in the jazz band there. And I studied harmony and a little counterpoint there in orchestration. And then I went to Berkeley, but I didn't last more than a semester there. And it was too much other shit I had to do that wasn't music. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
But through the good graces of Tom Constantin, who was already involved in it, I got into a graduate level composition course at Mills College with Luciano Berio, who was like at that time like one of the top three avant-garde composers from Europe. They had the German Stockhausen, they had the Frenchman Boulez, and they had the Italian Berio. And he came to Mills like every other year for like 5 years.
Ah, okay.
And so I got into that. Wow. You know, I took him one of my pieces that I'd written, and he let me in the course. And so, I learned a lot from him by osmosis, kind of.
Ah, interesting. That actually explains a lot with your compositional style, even with
the... It was a lot of it was, if I listen back to it now, I'd have to say it was ugly. And eventually I kind of abandoned composition completely, but also that desire to make it new and just referential only to itself, because that music basically doesn't, it only refers to itself. It doesn't refer to, I mean, there's no tonal center, there's no real tension and release, because there's no fundamental tone that underlies it all. So, it just didn't touch me. It was really cool because I could write down anything I wanted. I could write anything I could think of.
And was this for orchestra?
My big thing was a piece for four orchestras, four smaller orchestras.
Wow.
Around the
Did you get to actually
hall.
Hear that?
No. Come on. Can you imagine how much it would have cost?
No. Compositions? No.
But there was one silly thing that we did a thing at the Meme Troupe in San Francisco. Steve Reich was in my class. Okay. You heard of Steve Reich?
Yeah.
And Steve and TC and I did a concert of new music, and I wrote this stupid thing. You know, there wasn't any thought put into it or anything. I just like threw it down on a paper, and. It was called six and seven eighths for Bernardo Moreno.
Okay.
And my parents came to the concert, and the first thing my mom said was, "My goodness, Philip, I hope you're not hanging out with some pachuco."
And what did they think about Jerry and Wednesday?
They didn't know what to think.
Yeah.
But they were happy that I was doing something that I liked,
And when you guys first started, it was mostly covers and blues and stuff. Pigpen was mostly the front man.
Pigpen was the front man. And it started out being an electric blues band.
Right.
It grew out of the jug band, Mother McCree's Uptown Jug Champions.
The Champions.
So,
nice.
Yeah. And it started being an electric blues band. And so that one night in May, 65, I think it was, we all came down to, I was in San Francisco at the time, and we all came down to hear Garcia's new band, you know, Garcia and Pigpen's new band. And then that was the night he sat me down.
Was there a bass player already?
Oh, yeah.
He lost his job.
He was the son of the guy that owned the music store where they rehearsed.
And the
music store provided them with all their amplifiers.
Yeah, those guys always get gigs, don't they?
Yeah. Well, Jerry told me, he says, we have to tell this guy what notes to play, you know.
Right.
So come on and help us out. Huh?
And was there a moment, kind of a defining moment, I'm sure there was a few, but where you kind of said, wow, this is something, we're making something new right now.
Yeah, yeah. At one point we were working up Viola Lee Blues, and we did this incredible thing. At the end of it, and then like spontaneously came crashing back down into the grooves. And I said, after we did that, I went up to Jerry and I said, somewhat naively, you know, I said, man, this could be art. True learning experience.
And was that around the acid test kind of time?
That was just before
that. Just before that. And then did that kind of break the walls down once you...
Oh, yeah. Well, that created the group mind. Yeah,
right. And, well, that's something that actually is a great thing to touch on, because one thing that I've learned from playing with you and listening to all the music that you're involved in is about group mind, yeah, and group, yeah, improvisation. I came from a school growing up where it was like, you take a solo, you stop, someone else takes a solo.
Yeah.
And it took me a minute playing with you guys to kind of understand that it's not really about that. And when you get to a peak as a band, collectively, it's a whole other level. It's a whole other mountain.
I mean, in spite of all the great music that's been made by, in that format,
right?
You know, the collective thing is when it happens,
yeah,
you know, when it's harder to make happen,
right?
The head solo back to the head format, but when it clicks, man, it is transcendental.
Absolutely. And you know, I always think of the Dead playing these massive shows. You know, that's all the videos I've seen, the shows that I got to go to. How many years were you guys like banging it out in the clubs? And you know,
it kind of grew, not exponentially or logarithmic or anything. It just kind of grew a little bit at a time,
right?
Because all we really did was tour, so we just built an audience gradually, and then the big breakthrough was the 87 with the In the Dark album.
Yeah,
and so we had a hit,
yeah,
off of that record, and then all the mainstream people started coming in.
You know, in the recent years, there's been a lot of different bands, you know, that have covered the music and have been playing the music, and I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, I feel like, you know, you guys have created somewhat of, like in jazz, they call it the real book, and the, you know, there's the Dead book,
yeah,
and there's these songs and the kind of these vessels that people have taking all these different directions. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I absolutely love it. I mean, songs are like fairy tales. All versions are true. And we try to mix up the songs as well as much as we can. And the more of that, I mean, the songs now, they kind of, the product of Grateful Dead has now sort of taken on a life of its own.
It really has.
And I can predict that they'll still be playing these songs in 100 years.
I can say that for sure, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many bands out there doing it.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really inspires me is the fact that everybody loves to play these songs.
That's true.
All these bands, these musicians, they love to play these songs. Yeah, even like more mainstream guys or even jazz guys who come in and play this music. I can't tell you how many of them I've had say to me, "Oh, I never knew. I had no idea how great these songs were." You know,
I've had talks with people like John Scofield and Branford Marsalis and all these guys,
yeah,
about Grateful Dead music, and all of them. Well, the funny thing is that sometimes people don't realize how challenging the music can be, too.
Yeah.
You know, these jazz giants are struggling to get the parts right, and I find that really interesting.
Yeah, maybe it's a lot of them. It's the simplicity of the song,
right,
that is as challenging as the complicated parts. You know?
That's true.
Before we hear from Graham Lesh, I'd like to remind you that we're proud partners with Ben & Jerry's to help raise awareness of the Water Wheel Foundation. As mentioned earlier in the episode, listeners can receive free shipping on all orders over $50 using the promo code OSIRIS at checkout. Go to store.benjerry.com to get yourself some ice cream. Now back to Conversations with Kraz.
So, Graham, when did you start playing? I'm curious of like, was this something that you saw your dad playing and you were like, I want to do that? Or did it naturally kind of
It was a different kind of a thing where, I mean, the music was always around us, but it wasn't something I was like, oh, I want to do that. You know, we were just running around as little kids wanting to be like baseball players and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we were told basically we have to take piano lessons, and it was like another class in school. You get your math education, you get your, you know, English education, and you get your musical education. And so it kind of, my whole musical career grew out of that. And you know, I took piano lessons for 7-8 years and stopped doing that, and took a couple guitar lessons and didn't particularly like the lessons and stopped doing that, and then picked up guitar on my own in high school. And then that was the fun part,
right?
You know, then you can play with other people. You meet other, you know, friends that you didn't know were musicians, start jamming with them. And I think in that way, it wasn't a structured guitar education, at least, but I had the foundation of all the music theory and all the piano lessons that I'd taken. And I think learning piano is very useful for having a view of how the notes Absolutely. Relate to each other and all the modes and all the keys and everything like that. And then from there, it's just guitar is a physical thing, which it probably was with bass for you. You knew what you wanted to do, and then it's just getting the physical emotions down to make what is in your head. Exactly. Getting
and having that foundation, and then it's just kind of learning these physical things. And were you learning Grateful Dead songs at that age, and or were you writing?
Not really.
Because you've been writing songs for a while, right? That was
I have. My brother was writing songs a lot long before me, and he's younger. But yeah, I was messing around with songs. It was mostly like riffs. And then I'd, you know, be working with other friends who would be the singers or the, you know, the lyricists more. But I was learning like Metallica riffs and hard rock stuff. Yeah, see, we talked about this. Yeah. You know, I wasn't necessarily learning Grateful Dead stuff, but I was learning. I listened to a lot of Warren.
Yeah.
Right as this was all happening, Phil Lesh and Friends was sort of really getting into a groove. With the Cube,
which is with Warren Haynes.
Yeah, Warren Haynes, Jimmy Herring, Rob Barocco, and John Molo. And so I started listening to all of like Warren and Jimmy's past stuff because that got me into the Allman Brothers, and that got me into Government Mule and all these other guitar rock styles that weren't necessarily Grateful Dead. And it also got me into Grateful Dead songs, but not like the Grateful Dead did them. You know, I'm listening to The Cue do Saint Stephen, and they're putting like Good Times, Bad Times by Zeppelin and Mountain Jam in the middle of it. And it's totally different than the Grateful Dead ever did it. So I, you know, despite me being around the Grateful Dead and literally going to hundreds of Grateful Dead shows before I was 8 years old, I still had this very unique way of learning the music on guitar, at least.
And when Phil and Friends was forming, was your intention to kind of have one band, or did you all along want things to change? And
I started out, you know, wanting to have the revolving door thing,
right?
But then when the Cue got together, I mean, we did some stuff just in rehearsal that was kind of like what happened with Viola Lee Blues, and we finish up and everybody's looking around and saying, "What was that? What was that?"
Yeah,
so
I
kept that going for a good, you know, good 3-4 years.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but Soul Live opened for the Cue a couple times way, way long ago.
Oh yeah,
like Toronto and Buffalo. And I remember sitting there, and I had seen the Grateful Dead, but I'd never seen Phil and Friends. And I was a Jimmy Herring fan from ARU, I was just there like, melting, you know, watching him and Warren go.
That was a great lineup.
Really, really great. Really great.
I'm hoping to maybe get that back together.
Yeah,
maybe next year.
I hope so too. Yeah.
Just for a couple of shows.
Yeah, it's always still the same whenever you do play. It was like every couple of years for a while.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, I don't know, Molo would be like, I don't know. It's like, do we remember these songs? And then like they get on stage and it'd be the best thing, you know? It'd just be a race car again, you know?
So when did you, Graham, when did you start, I guess, well, is what you had, what was your first band?
I jammed with some friends in high school, one of whom is actually an amazing guitar player, this dude Ryan Lerman, who's been in John Legend's band, he's been in Michael Bublé's band, he's been in Ben Folds band as a bass player, he's been in, I think now he's got this band Scary Pockets.
I've heard of them.
Funk band with the dude Jack from Pomplamoose, who also went to my high school. We didn't ever had a name or anything. We'd play like, you know, talent shows and, you know, assemblies and stuff like that, and just sort of hang out in our basement and jam. I had a couple bands in college. One of them called Maiden Lane survived college, and we played for a few years in San Francisco. Actually opened for Further at the Fox one time.
Cool.
And then that band sort of, you know, everyone moves and goes away, and sort of slowly morphed into Midnight North. Mm-hmm. Me and our drummer were our original drummer. Were the two holdovers from both bands.
Gotcha.
And but then, you know, while this is all happening, Phil and Friends is going on, Further's going on, and then Further sort of starts seeming like it's going to slow down, and we do the show at the barn with Levon and Mamie and all them in 2010. And that gives my folks the idea for Terrapin Crossroads. And so while this is all happening, I'm doing that. My brother and I are learning more Grateful Dead songs. We're starting to all sing together and get those family harmonies going. You know, learning I Know You Writer and the intricacies of, you know, all those harmonies and stuff.
I gotta
like
ask
that.
Phil really quick, what's that like? What was that like for you?
There are no words for that.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't even imagine. I miss that.
Yeah.
Terribly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that I get to see that again. I mean, the first time I played with you guys, I think it was 2013.
Yeah.
And it was both you guys, and it was Terrapin Family Band. I remember feeling pretty emotional.
Yeah.
Just watching you guys do that.
It was really cool. And Brian's a great musician. He's not doing it now, but he still writes us songs sometimes. Yeah. He still writes songs and sends some to us, and we've played some of them.
Galilee is still
That's from before. That's an American Jubilee song, he had with Ross and Coford.
Brian actually composed a part of the Terrapin Suite that wasn't set by the Grateful Dead. Two parts.
We haven't worked up the second one yet.
We've only worked up one of them, but I mean, it's just
Jack of
so
Roses.
Beautifully.
Right.
Jack of
Roses.
Yeah.
So did Terrapin Family Band, was that a did it really happen really organically, or were you thinking like, you know, I want to do something with my family and, you know, or
it started with us playing Phil and Friends shows, the occasional one. We did the one in 2010 at Levon's. I think it was Larry had just convinced you to do it, I guess. And we just sort of put together a family band. We knew that, that Amy was in Levon's band and that it would be a cool thing. And then we did it again the next year. And then in 2012, we opened Terrapin Crossroads. And for me, that's right when Midnight North was forming. So we sort of had this place to play that helped our development for sure. But at the same time, Terrapin Crossroads had all of this time to fill. And it was like, hey, let's try and get people into the restaurant. Like, oh, Jackie's in town. Ross, you just play with Jackie over in the corner, basically, you know? Yeah. And before there was even a stage in the bar, it was just like that part of the bar, just like on that piece of floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you would come down and play with Jackie or Chris Robinson or Ross and me or something. And that sort of slowly, at the end of 2012, morphed into me and Brian and Ross and Alex Coford, who's like our cousin, he's like an old family friend, just jamming with Scott Patton, and we called it the Terrapin Family Band, and the idea was for it to be the house band.
Gotcha.
At Terrapin. And it took, you know, a year, 9 months or something for that to even turn into a band at all, more than just like sort of jam sessions. And then we decided to sort of take it on the road, right? Yeah. We didn't really do any Terrapin Family gigs before.
Didn't it sort of morph into American Jubilee first?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Brian and Ross and Alex were...
Yeah.
And Scott Patton, our bass player at the time, had their own band of original music, American Jubilee. Yeah, and then...
And you guys opened for Phil and Friends a few times.
I wasn't in American Jubilee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They did.
Although you did sit in at Sullivan Hall with them, right?
No, Sullivan Hall was the Terrapin Family Band. That was us.
Oh.
That was with you.
Was I playing?
It all kind of goes, it all bleeds
so many gigs.
Yeah.
So few brain cells.
But yeah, so those Sullivan Hall gigs are when we sort of took the... Phil Lesh and the Terrapin Family Band is a different thing from the Terrapin Family Band.
Right.
Which now it's just the Terrapin Family Band. Right. It's all the same. But at the time it was, you know, we'd jam at home at Terrapin with Scott on bass and it'd just be the Terrapin Family Band. And then we'd go to New York and do Sullivan Hall and those boat shows.
Yeah.
Those shows on the...
That was great.
Yeah, the rocks off. And that would be Phil Lesh and the Terrapin Family Band. So that's sort of... And you sat in with us at the Bowl at one of those.
Yep.
One of the last ones we did of those. So.
Right, yeah. Right. And so are there... I know that there's been some recording, and hopefully there'll be an album someday.
We're still sort of writing. I mean, you were there for the writing session.
I got to be there for some of the writing and be a part of some of the writing, which was very cool. So
I mean, we kind of have a new lineup coming, not for this weekend at the show.
That's exciting.
You never know if once we get everything sort of set up with that lineup.
Yeah.
We just did a rehearsal with one of those new songs that we wrote.
Great.
And it... with the new groove, with Nathan drumming, it's
great.
Sounds pretty cool.
And Nathan, who also plays in Midnight North.
Yes, Nathan
and
Graham.
And Midnight North just recently released a live album, which I just listened to actually this morning, which was really... And it sounds amazing, by the
cool.
way.
Cool, thank
who
you.
Who recorded that?
We just had our friend John Hart, who works at Terrapin.
Yeah.
He just put two 24-track recorders and plugged them into the Snake and got a super raw, you know...
Sounds great, though.
30 to 40 track.
And there's
multi-track.
A bunch of guests on there.
Yep.
Phil's on there.
Yep.
Bob Weir's on there.
Yes, he is.
Mahali.
And Ryan.
And from Ryan Twiddle. From Twiddle. Yep. And the Horns, too.
Yeah. And the Horns is cool. It's our friends Michael Bello and Liz Larson on sax and trombone. And then on trumpet is our keyboard player, Alex Jordan's dad, Jay.
Oh, okay.
Who's, yeah. So it was even more of a family,
family
show.
It really is.
But yeah. It was a fun night. And, you know, we recorded the whole thing and we had big plans to put out like a six, you know, LP set or something, you know, like however many vinyl records it would take to fit all that music on.
Yeah.
You know, at 20 minutes.
Are you going to do vinyl or is it just digital?
Right now it's just CD and digital.
Okay.
But yeah, so what we did is instead, because that would take forever.
Okay, where can I get a copy of that?
Yeah.
Midnightnorth.com. No. or your favorite streaming site.
Yeah.
If you want to.
I did Spotify.
If you want to pay us half a cent per stream.
Sorry.
But
when you have the vinyl, I'll buy the vinyl.
Yeah,
or I'll buy the CD.
The vinyl's great. But yeah.
And it's recorded at the Great American Music Hall.
Yep. The album is called Selections from the Great American Music Hall. We have The Music Never Stopped with you and Bob on it.
Right.
We've got Only a River from Bob's new record with us backing
great,
him up,
way, yeah.
which is like one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
It's so good. And Elliot and I just loved singing those harmonies with Bob. That was so cool.
And Elliot sounded great on Music Never Stopped.
Yeah.
Well, there seems to be a beat now. I can feel it in my feet now. Here comes again. There's a band out on the highway. Half stepping at a time. Well, it's a rainbow for the sky. It's fireworks, the light bees and climb. And everybody's dancing.
Yeah, it's just we put one of the Twiddle songs on there that Mahali led, and then a bunch of ours with the horns.
I have to also say one of my favorite sets that I've been a part of in a while was when I sat in with you guys doing the Crosby, Stills, and Nash night.
Yeah.
CSNY, I should say. And that's such a cool thing about Terrapin that I wanted to add is that it's this playground where you guys can just try so many different things. And, you know, I've gotten to do some really, really cool stuff. I did a trio with Bobby Vega and Jay Lane. And actually, there was a moment there where Phil was on the side of the stage and you came up and played Curse Lifter with me. And he was just nailing all these really intricate parts. And I saw him just glowing over there. And I was like, yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah. And anyway, it's such a cool... It's so amazing to have that place.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky.
It's been a game changer for me. That's for sure.
And you get to stay at home. You get to go to bed.
It's like a sandbox.
Yeah,
you can go in there and make anything you want.
So the CSNY thing started here. Actually, that was
that's right.
That was the Relics folks. Alive. It was Brooklyn Bowl. Brooklyn is. Right. CSNY show, actually. And then we finally brought it to Terrapin because my mom's we're all big CSNY fans, but my mom especially was like, you have to do it at Terrapin. And I was like,
man, you guys
kept trying
to
make it happen.
Like I've never heard. It was so good. Yeah. I'm a huge, my mom used to play me those records. My earliest records were those records.
We just had this idea to do Sweet Judy Blue Eyes as a rock song.
Yeah.
You know, because it kind of is, but they don't have drums except in the one. I mean, it's a suite, right? It's four songs in one. Yeah. But it's the second song has the drums and the rest of it doesn't. It's like a little percussion, but mostly just Stills doing his open tuning, acoustic guitar, like as if it was a percussion instrument. But we did that once and then we were like, we should see if we could do it, learn a few more and do a night and then the Brooklyn Bowl and Relics. I think it was Brad was just like, you have to do that now. So
it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Sometimes those guys, they get good ideas.
Yeah, they get good ideas.
Sometimes we
get some pretty good ideas. Write them down. Yeah, it was it fit right in our vibe to have this East Coast playground as well. Yeah.
And that's another thing I want to add about the family band, too, is there's so many different voices, and especially now with Nikki, but also Ross kind of brings a whole different energy, and having having Coford being able to sing, it's really a cool thing, cool experience for me to come in and be a part of that. And, you know, there's all these different kind of moments in the show where different people kind of bring their thing to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it comes back to you were talking about all the different people playing Grateful Dead music now. Yeah. Like no one's going to sound like the Grateful Dead even the Grateful Dead didn't sound like the Grateful Dead all the time or like they had before.
Yeah.
As they go, you know, they go through the years. So we just like to bring our own thing to it. Ross sounds different than anybody else who's done it, and Coford doesn't sing like anybody else, and hopefully I bring something unique and
absolutely.
It's a cool thing.
I don't know if there's anything else you guys want to add, anything that's coming up that,
is anything coming up for you?
Anything coming up for me? Well, I get to play with you guys tonight
in
Central Park, which is one of the, and I'm really, really looking forward to the Apollo show.
Yes.
This will probably come out after that, but, some incredible special guests that night and, special place and, you know, being a part of Headcount, cause we need people to get out and vote. And help change this situation.
Yeah. If you're listening, don't forget to get out and vote.
Yes.
Vote the bums out.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. That's all, folks. Many thanks for tuning into the Relics Audio Hour, and a special thank you to Eric Krasno for leading that conversation. Again, I am your host, Jesse Lauder. If you'd like to learn more about me, you can visit my website, JESSELAUTER.com, or follow me on Instagram at JESSELAUTER. There are several people I'd like to thank for making this episode possible. Brad Tucker, Tara Patton, and Mark Millman for providing our cover photo. You are currently listening to the Shakedown Street from the Terrapin Family Band's Head Count Benefit Concert, which took place a couple days after the interview you just heard. Featuring Robert Randolph, Nikki Bloom, and Talib Kweli. Enjoy, and be sure to tune in next time to the Relics Audio Hour, and please, don't forget to vote.
Your beef is mine, as long as the sun shines to light up the sky. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. As time goes by, an eye for an eye. We in this together, son, your beef is mine. As long as the sun shines to light up the sky. We in this together, say, yo. As time goes by, an eye for an eye. Everybody die when the truth is in the building. Know these rocks gon' lie, cause like my anti-jazz fans, and if I don't, look at your hands up in the sky, wave from side to side. 20 years plus, still killing it right. Michael Polo off the Richter, man is 9.5. Like the earthquake, shaking it up like Fort Lock. When I talk about pop, what I mean is organic, like planet seeds for the. We need to breathe on the planet, and we really take the planet for granted. Both of the ten and rock, planet, every wonder why the planet's up. Raising an image, are we worshiping the man and not the underground? Every time I hear planet rock, disappointed in the leadership, and the God evidence is more than the image of the camera got. While I'm live, babe, make it seem unclean. Papers only evidence for things that I see. Misinformation make it harder for us to follow discussion. Educated gets the beat, wild assumption. Information leads to knowledge, not lead to wisdom. Wisdom leads to understanding. You ever that you start demanding justice. Justice is what love looks like in public. Woo!